This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Paul Rasmussen. Paul last night spent an interesting evening with Chris Wallace, who his entire news career covers so much ground, working for Fox News, CNN News, working for ABC, as a writer and journalist, and the son of the late Mike Wallace, who obviously came to fame as one of the investigative reporters on 60 Minutes. And it was interesting, the conversation and the questions from the audience, a lot of them were about the media and what the role of the media is and where it stands today. It was fascinating.
Kind of a shame that things have gotten to the point now, and in recent polling, repeatedly, the public's evaluation of the national media and their level of trust is an all-time low. It's down in the 20% range.
And so, on that note, he was asked about this signal. So for people that don't know, this Signal is an app, right?
It's like WhatsApp or Messenger or the text messaging app on like an iPhone, for example.
Right. But apparently there's supposed to be a way to create a private conversation, even though it's a public app, but it is exposed to obviously being hacked. And that was a lot of the conversation about what Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, and others were talking about in terms of bombing that turned out.
Yep. For those of you who haven't seen or heard much on this story, basically what Hegseth is talking about is messages were shared with administration officials about attacks that were about to or taking place, U.S. airstrikes in Yemen. The Atlantic reporter, who happens to be a well-known Trump hater, let's be honest about it, chose to make that public instead of going to the administration and saying, hey, I'm included in this. What happened here? He's made a story of it. And now, as you would imagine, with the blood sport that they play in Washington, D.C., we've got a big story now. And, I mean, the things that they're saying about each other on the opposite sides of this, it's entertaining now. Grab the popcorn.
Well, to that end, CBS's Jaron Hill. We'll start with, what did Donald Trump say about it yesterday?
I think it's all a witch hunt.
President Donald Trump continued to downplay the growing concerns stemming from The Atlantic's editor Jeffrey Goldberg being mistakenly added to a group chat on Signal where top Trump officials discussed sensitive military operations.
Nobody's texting war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, No sources, no methods, no classified information.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth Wednesday, after Goldberg published more messages from the chat, including some where Hegseth detailed the specific times F-18 fighter jets would launch to strike a target terrorist. Less than 3 hours later, Hegseth wrote, sea-based Tomahawks would be launched.
They're saying nothing happened. I'm saying that this represents a serious breach in national security.
CBS News has learned the top Democrat and Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee are pushing for a classified briefing and an expedited report from the Inspector General on the incident. Meanwhile, President Trump is turning up the heat on trade. Yesterday, he announced a new 25% tariff on all imported automobiles starting April 2nd.
This is the beginning of Liberation Day in America.
The White House claims the new tariffs will lead to $100 billion in revenue and push companies to make more cars in the U.S. But economists say they could add thousands of dollars to the price of a new car.
President Trump's reciprocal tariffs are also set to hit on April 2nd, but he's watering those down, saying they'll probably be more lenient than reciprocal because the original tariffs would be very tough for people.
CBS is Jared Hill. So there's plenty of news coming out of Washington every day.
Yeah. Circling back, by the way, to what they're now calling Signalgate. Here's a quote from the president's press secretary. She said, I guess yesterday, "We are not going to be lectured about national security and American troops by Democrats in the mainstream media who turned the other cheek when the Biden administration left 13 service members to die in Afghanistan."
That was there.
That's, I mean, they, so the gloves are off.
And I would imagine that will continue. But more practically, from a daily standpoint, the tariffs on the automobiles are probably more tangible for the average person who wants to buy a car.
And I think it's interesting, too, that in recent days, they didn't get a lot of news coverage, but some. Rolls-Royce announced that it was going to move some of its production to the United States to avoid these tariffs. And also, Hyundai announced last week a $20 billion investment and increased production in the U.S., with almost $6 billion being spent for a new steel facility in Louisiana. And I thought, Larry, that that was ironic in that the administration's, you know, really pumping that one, but their, you know, position on the Nippon Steel takeover of U.S. Steel for even more money than that, like almost $15 billion, has been kind of lukewarm. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
And we're all concerned about what's going to happen with that. It's been kind of quiet on that lately, hasn't it?
Yet there are so many, and again, having a conversation with Chris Wallace, who spent his career as a journalist, he said there's so much news breaking every day that it's almost like a juggling act to figure out which is the most important to impact the most people in any given moment.
And it's got to be hard to do that job if you want to be good at it, if you're in Washington or New York. I think it would be difficult because they're so insular and isolated from the rest of the country. What matters to people like you and me and our listeners here in Pittsburgh may not be even on their radar in either D.C. or New York.
And I think they're obviously looking at ways to battle each other, you know, in Washington. It's,
well, I mean, this is the, you know, what they, this kind of thing's been going on for as long as I can remember. There's some kind of a mistake is made. There's some kind of vulnerability. And then the one side attacks the other. And you know how this goes. I mean, and it doesn't make any difference if there's a Republican in the White House or a Democrat. If this had happened under, you know, Barack Obama's watch, somebody would have made a big deal out of it and turned it into a, you know, these people don't know what the hell they're doing, right?
Right. And it was fascinating to hear Chris Wallace talk about how to navigate that these days. He's covered presidents all the way back to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
So Republican and Democratic presidents. Do you want to hear who the speakers are for the speaker series?
Absolutely.
For next year?
Yeah.
They released it last night.
So this was the last speech this year?
No, there's one more. Okay. Next month is Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Oh, my. What a great session that will be.
Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, who, for those that don't know, has produced some of the greatest musicals of all time. Phantom of the Opera being one,
easily.
Cats being another, and
yep.
unbelievable creativity.
Some of the longest running Broadway productions ever.
He's also the producer. So he has all aspects. I mean, the mind of someone that can put those kind of shows together.
So let's have the lineup.
All right. I'm going to make you wait just a minute. But it's interesting. If you have a minute.
Oh, I'll make a minute.
Pittsburgh Speaker Series presented by the University of Pittsburgh, the Spanos Group of Raymond James, and News Radio KDKA. Last night, University of Pittsburgh Speaker Series at Heinz Hall. Talked to journalist Chris Wallace. And next month, I mentioned Andrew Lloyd Webber will wrap up this season. But each and every year, Paul, there's a lot of anticipation because they build up, speaking about teasing, the next season. So the second to the last speaker, and there are seven each year, they reveal the lineup. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The first speaker, born and raised in Brooklyn, majored in the classics in college, his career spanning 50 years, world-renowned accomplishments, has touched billions of lives, a leader from the start. He was the captain of his high school basketball team, advised seven presidents, both Republican and Democrat, earning the highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Now, who is this?
The number one ranked subscriber survey, opening the season, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Oh, boy.
The lightning rod through the COVID.
They are not going to shirk any possible.
No.
I mean, this is as controversial a speaker as you can find.
Right out of the gate.
I mean, the man is either respected or reviled.
And you should have heard the audience reaction.
What was it?
It was a gasp, right? It was like, oh, my God. You know, because I don't think anyone expected Dr. Fauci, but he is the first speaker. Next up.
Yeah, when you go down that list of credentials and accomplishments, and then you hear his name, wow!
Yeah.
I mean, talk about provocative.
Next is decorated combat veteran with a PhD in military history. He commanded forces in wartime Afghanistan and Iraq, helped shape U.S. military and foreign policy, hailed as the Army's preeminent warrior thinker. He was tapped to serve as National Security Advisor by President Trump. In November, it'll be retired three-star Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster.
Mm-hmm.
A big name in that world. Next up, educated in Britain at Cambridge, worked closely with Senator John McCain to pass the Magnitsky Act to sanction foreign officials who commit human rights violations. Longtime contributor to the Washington Post. Check this out. He survived two attempts on his life, poisoning attempts by his own government, and was sentenced to 25 years in a Siberian prison for opposing the war in Ukraine.
I think I know who this is.
His essays, smuggled out of solitary confinement, won a 2024 Pulitzer Prize, freed in a East-West prisoner exchange this past August, Russian journalist and opposition leader Vladimir Karamurza.
Mm-hmm.
It will be fascinating to hear somebody like that who's been through so much.
You know, what this all reminds me of, by the way, I don't know if you feel the same way, but remember the dust-up back in the, I guess it was in the late 70s, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the author?
Yes.
Again, it's this dissident voice that comes out of Russia that winds up in the world spotlight.
And his miracle of getting this word out and then thinking his life may have been over twice.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. Currently partnering with Tom Hanks to take their most recent book to the big screen. Best-selling Pulitzer Prize-winning presidential historian has written about America's most legendary leaders. An expert on leadership and democracy, her work was the inspiration for Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln. Number one on the annual survey for authors and historians, President Lyndon Johnson's favorite White House intern.
Oh, boy.
Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Okay, all right.
One of the sharpest minds in global economics and geopolitics. This next speaker, an advisor to the White House, a doctorate from the London School of Economics, credited with coining the term shrinkflation, tech entrepreneur with the real talent of making sense of emerging technologies and shifts in world financial markets, a trusted voice in business, policymakers, innovators around the world. Next February, the brilliant mind of economist Pippa Mulgren. Now, not a household name like an Anthony Fauci, but when you hear her resume.
Easily interesting enough, though, right?
Yes. And just two more. A Canadian. How about this? Phenomenally successful author. His debut book spent over 400 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and then he broke his own record 8 years later. His writing changed the way many look at the world, one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people, an award-winning podcaster, outlier. You've read him for years, maybe, in The New Yorker. The sixth speaker is the author of The Tipping Point, Malcolm Gladwell. And finally, closing out next April, a visual journey of the Earth's wildest places, from the Arctic to the warm waters of Mexico. One of the most influential conservation photographers of all time. She's a marine biologist and was named Smithsonian's Photographer of the Year. Very excited to meet and introduce National Geographic explorer Christina Mittermaier. So,
what an interesting lineup. There's some names that are well known by those who, you know, keep track of what's going on, and then you've got this. I mean, talk about starting with a bang.
Big time.
Wow.
Yeah, that'll be a moment. But the speaker series, and you can go to pittsburghspeakers.org, the team that vets these speakers, they want a group. They want, and this is a diverse group that you know they're presenting for next year. So fascinating, interesting, and for those that don't know, you sit down, I introduce the speaker. The speaker comes out, usually does 45 minutes to an hour of a lecture, and then there's a half hour of Q&A from audience questions. And that formula has worked very well. And it was sold out last night. There wasn't an empty seat.
Larry, how many years have you been doing the speaker series? It seems like it's been quite a long time.
12.
Wow.
Yeah, Jim Cunningham from WQED did the first 10 years, and I've done the last 12. We're the media sponsor, and Jim did a great job. Just a tremendous journalist and a kind man and a Pittsburgh guy. And it's an honor to do this.
You know, over the years, you talked about some of the guests that you interacted with, and the two that I keep going away with, Alan Alda's one of them.
Remember that?
That was a pretty memorable time.
Oh, Jane Fonda, and Dan Rather.
Exactly.
Prime ministers, presidents, including Bill Clinton.
The one that you tell about Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, though, it's a fun story.
Oh, that was great. And then meeting, and originally before I became the moderator, was Walter Cronkite. And I did a one-on-one television interview with him. And I remember sitting down with him, and I'm looking at him thinking, you know, he was such a big presence on television back when people watched network news.
Yeah,
millions of people.
And the way he closed his newscast with, and that's the way it is. I mean, what a great conclusion to a newscast.
And my first question to him was, I said, Mr. Cronkite, please call me Walter. And I said, well, did you ever cover a major story around the Pittsburgh area? Well, Larry, and that's all I heard. Walter Cronkite said my name. And he said, I covered the nuclear reactor and shipping port when it online in 1954.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
What an amazing life he led.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Thanks for choosing us. Have you gone through the process of having your genetic sequencing with 23andMe to find out who you are? Well, if you don't know, and it was widely publicized, they have filed for Chapter 11. And now a lot of customers are wondering, where will my DNA data go?
Yes.
And joining us is Colin Waukee, who is a cybersecurity and data privacy expert and also a former Oklahoma House of Representatives, where he authored a data privacy legislation for just this kind of thing, to adequate, you know, consumer data privacy protections. So, Colin, welcome to KDK.
Morning, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Have you ever had your genes sequenced?
No, because as my wife accuses me, I wear a tinfoil hat and I keep my data to myself.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Oh, my.
But this does, because of the bankruptcy, open up a important conversation about someone's DNA data and privacy. What do you suppose is going to happen here?
Well, there are a lot of different aspects to this. First of all, for most of your listeners, there are two big concerns. The first big concern is, what is somebody going to do with the data once they purchase it, right? The other big concern, though, is this information, while it exists out there, it opens up individuals to exploitation, both through deep fakes as well as discrimination. So, for example, 23andMe just settled a data breach lawsuit from a few years ago in which 5 million records were hacked. It's my understanding 23andMe has about 25 million records on file. Those 6 million or so files that were hacked were all or targeted towards Chinese or Ashkenazi individuals. So your genetic information, unlike your Social Security information and those sorts of things, can't be changed. And if somebody gets a hold of genetic information from you that says you have a particular disease or a particular ethnic trait, and someone wants to discriminate against you, they have the ability to do that now, because there aren't really any books on the laws that prohibit that type of discrimination.
Colin, how would a prospective employer, for example, get a hold of this DNA information and make use of it in terms of like hiring?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, for example, 23andMe, right now, unless there is a state law that applies to them, for example, like maybe Colorado, there are very few state laws that would necessarily apply to 23andMe in this situation. So that means you have to look at 23andMe's terms of service and conditions, which are constantly changing. So because they're not governed by HIPAA or any federal law, that means that in theory, if somebody buys this information, just like every other thing that you buy, sell, or do on the internet and how that data is traded with data brokers, they could share this information with data brokers. There's nothing that would prohibit them from doing that. And then data brokers package all this information. They say Colin Waukee likes to eat at McDonald's, shop at Dillard's, and by the way, here's his genetic info. And if I'm an employer, all I've got to do is go to data brokers and I can find that information for, you know, nominal costs.
Well, that said, no doubt we have many listeners in this area who have gone through this process. What are you advising people to do?
So I tell everybody, call and get your information deleted as soon as possible. You may have to submit a form through their website, but get your information deleted as soon as possible. That is going to be the most important thing that you can do to protect your financial and personal security. After that, you know, there is a chance that some of your data remains behind in 23andMe, because oftentimes what they do is they take your data, they copy it, and they do what's called de-identification, which means Colin Waukee's personal identifiers are removed from that, which is all well and good, except other data sets exist in the world. And if I can relink basically one data point back to 23andMe, I can re-identify whose information that is. So it may not cure the problem, but it certainly goes a very long way to solving the problem.
Colin, three words just came up for me as I was listening to this in terms of the legal ramifications. Class action lawsuit.
Yeah, well, if you read 23andMe's terms of service, they have a big disclaimer against any form of class action lawsuit. And I'm glad you brought that up, though, Larry, because what I should have said when you said, what can consumers do? I should have said, call your state and federal representatives and tell them to get serious about data privacy legislation. It is quite pathetic that we've been dealing with this for 25 years now. We know individuals have been exploited financially and personally by the buying and selling of their data, and yet our representatives are doing nothing about it. That's what needs to happen.
It sounds like, Colin, our representatives don't have enough knowledge of the subject, and they're obviously hesitant to do anything because this, as you know, privacy issue comes up in a lot of social media platforms, too.
That's right. It really comes down to dollars and cents, though. I agree that most legislators probably aren't well-informed enough to write good legislation about this, but there are organizations out there that do have good legislation. The problem is dollars and cents. So, for example, in Oklahoma, I ran this country's strongest data privacy bill. It was what's called opt-in, which means that you have to say you get to collect my data and sell it before you collect it and sell it. Every other state law is opt-out. And so the real problem, though, is that Facebook, once Apple, their app store, went to opt-in, Facebook said that it cost them $10 billion of revenue in one quarter. So that's why the lobbyists don't like this. That's why the tech companies don't like data privacy legislation, is because of the money they're losing when they can't collect and sell your data unilaterally.
Fascinating and informative. Colin, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Colin Waukee, who is a cybersecurity and data privacy expert. Sounds like he really knows what he's talking about, too.
He was very much so.
But what he said just resonated. $10 billion in a quarter they lost just by making the opt-in as opposed to opt-out.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the top 10 richest people on Earth. Most of them have positions and made their money in social media.
Yes. Yeah,
you're not going to change that narrative.
It's an entirely new facet of our economy. And and we haven't even touched yet cryptocurrency.
That said, have you ever done this 23andMe?
No. I remember though years back that 23andMe was like a sponsor of the CBS radio newscast, remember?
Yep.
You know, this is the CBS News sponsored by 23andMe.
Don't you get the feeling though that some people got these readings on who, you know, their breakdown of their genetic history and some of these other, I guess you could get your DNA checked to see where you came from.
Well, sure. Yeah. The way I look at it is I'm just not curious for this reason. I know I'm defective.
You don't want to know any more about you.
I know enough already.
Oh, that's gold.
From the Goldberg Persky & White News Desk, it's opening day, and Paul Skeens is starting for the Bucks at Miami. Let's take a flashback now.
1-2, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Skeens strikes out Aaron Judge on the slider, and he strikes out Soto and Judge in the first. Paul Skeens, get ready for a Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh.
And he certainly earned that distinction. So in his second season, Paul, he's added a pitcher, too, to his repertoire.
And now the question is, Larry, can he be a Cy Young Award winner? Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addressed again the leaked group chat about U.S. airstrikes in Yemen that accidentally included a journalist telling reporters in Hawaii,
"There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information."
Simple question is, why were they using this app in the first place? So I imagine that's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I would imagine that. Yeah, we should hear something on that angle from the White House, right? And Visit Pittsburgh's annual meeting was held Wednesday, hosted by an upbeat CEO, Jared Bacher.
When we look at 2026 and beyond, we'll have a new airport, a new international airport that'll be world-class. The downtown area will continue to see developments. There will be a lot more opportunities for us to point to the success of the NFL draft.
And the NFL draft is expected to bring $150 to $200 million to the economy that weekend.
Oh, yeah. And Larry, they released some images, some renderings of what the draft web will look like in terms of some of the venues. I was impressed. You could probably see those. They probably have all of them available right now at visitpittsburgh.com.
That's it. Visitpittsburgh.com. A lot of people who are born here, natives like me, you have this resource right at your fingertips.